by going last. First, because I'm standing between you and your Halloween candy, or the adult Halloween candy known as Happy Hour, and also because these panelists are all so fantastic, and I'm not sure if I have anything left to add. But I just wanted to talk a little bit today. I have 10 tips for an efficient or effective social media program. They don't make really snazzy slides, but I didn't think that you really just wanted to look at me talking. So I've decided to do them in tweet style because top 10 lists make great Twitter posts. So my first tip is to start with your strengths. And this is something, and really all of these, I have them on my desk and I go back to them when we're considering new activities or we're thinking about what to do. So whether you're just starting or whether you're looking at expanding your program, I think this is really important. We were starting CDC's first YouTube channel. We wanted to know the best way to go about it, and at the time, NOAA was one of the biggest government channels, and they still have an amazing YouTube channel. We thought, you know, we'll just call our partners at NOAA and we'll ask them what their secrets are, and then we'll have it all figured out. And so we called NOAA, and they were really gracious, and they said, oh, it's really easy. You take all your videos of baby seals, and you put them on YouTube, and people love them. And I thought, well, we're screwed because we don't do baby seals at CDC. And so we were never going to be able to use YouTube in the same way that NOAA was using YouTube. But that's okay because we had to figure out what we did that was unique, what we did that was really interesting, what our value was, and run with that. So there's a variety of different videos now on the CDC YouTube page. Some of the ones that were really highly viewed when I were there were during outbreaks or when different, whether it was salmonella or there was a hot topic, we would grab an expert, have them sit down and just, you know, give us what are the you know, you have 2 minutes. What do you want to tell people about this situation? They weren't heavily produced. They weren't flashy looking, but people really wanted that information and they got a lot of views. So we didn't have baby seals, but we did rely on what we had that was of value. The next is don't forget that you're a communicator. So I'm sure that we have amazing health communicators and behavior change specialists in this room, and that doesn't mean that that goes away when you're using new media. You still want to rely on the same behavior change theories. You want to use good communication principles. You're just using a different channel. So don't forget that you're already an expert communicator, and don't lose some of that because if you... the more you lose those tactics and those skills of really focusing on the behavior change piece, you're not going to be as effective in social media, even if it does really look cool or it is really flashy. The next is to understand the value of each activity. So when you sit down at the computer, you go to Facebook for a very, very different reason than you go to YouTube. And it's not just that these are all social media compared to traditional media. Each of these things has a place in your daily life, and each of them has a value that's independent and distinct. And so going back to the slide that Miguel had about the person with the mobile phone, they were each of those pictures was someone using a mobile phone, but they were using them in very different ways. So what is the value of that channel and what that adds to a person's life, and how can you leverage that to really make it interesting and engaging? A good example of this is I know that I have a lot of these, and I'm sure that you guys can relate if you've subscribed for an email newsletter and it comes every other week and it pops up in your inbox and you go, that's great, I'm so glad I have it, I will never read it, delete, because they're going to send me another one in 2 weeks. And so is that really a valuable activity? What would be more meaningful? So one thing that I learned working on health reform with the folks at the White House who came from campaign background and are really excellent at email is make it different, make it interesting. Don't send it out on a regular schedule because that's what makes sense and you have to fill the time. Send it out when you have something really interesting to say. And include one thing that you really want somebody to do. So you really want them to watch this one video or you have this one piece of content that you really want to highlight. And that helps grab people's attention and get them engaged in what could be a very boring newsletter. Social media is a two-way street. So if you're going to ask for people's time in participating, make sure that you use their time wisely. If you're going to ask them to comment or vote or rank, I would really suggest that you think about how you're going to use that to make the program better. Are you going to use that to change internal policies? What are you going to do with this this content? A good example of this is when they launched the OpenGov initiative almost a year ago, last February, I believe, and agencies all over the government put up idea share pages or other opportunities for people to comment on things that their government could do differently to be more transparent, to be more participatory. And people really participated if they felt like those suggestions would be taken. If their time and energy could be used to make a difference, that's how you get meaningful participation, and it means that you're making a commitment to actually do something with the responses. So when you start an activity, you should be sure internally that you're willing to make the changes or at least consider them when they come in from the outside world. The next tip is to set expectations accurately and to be upfront about your goals. You don't have to compete with Nike. You don't have to be as cool as Sprite. I will never be as cool as any of those campaigns, and people don't expect that from the government. But they want to know how you're going to use these channels so that everyone can be starting from the same expectations. It's okay if you say, here's a place where you can send in comments or we'll take feedback, but by the way, we take feedback Monday through Friday and it takes us an average of 48 hours to respond. People are really receptive to that, and just because some of the channels are used by other larger organizations or by marketing companies to be more immediate, you don't have to follow that. You just have to make sure that everybody is on the same page, your users, about how it's going to work so they're not disappointed. I don't think anyone else that, you know, expects the government to be like Coca-Cola. The next tip is to use effective social media programs. You really need to use all the data that was discussed today. So I really loved how much data was incorporated. I learned some new tips and tricks today, both on Twitter and on Facebook. And you should use that to iterate. So I launched a new website for our office in August. It's very new compared to, you know, our old website. It's probably there for around 58 years before it had been updated before that. But I still think it's my job to make it a little bit better every day. And I think that's your job in social media, too. Unless you're doing a study where you want to have sort of one standard set of activities over a period of time and then you can go back and measure it, you don't have any reason for keeping things the same. I think sometimes because we in the health communication world think of ourselves as experts, we think that we've developed a message and this is the way that it should be said and this is the way to frame it to get the best outcome when it comes to behavior change, and so this is what we're going to go with. But you can still experiment. I would love to see more sort of A-B testing in social media. So we tried this message and then we tried this message. They were really similar, and what did we learn? You don't have to always be the expert, and you should use all the data you can to make changes as you go along. One of the things that I learned, particularly from YouTube, it gives you really good metrics about views and especially where people drop off in your video, so where they stop watching. And we noticed that a lot of people dropped off about 15 seconds before the video was over because they'd given it the 90 seconds, they'd gotten the meat of the content, they could tell the video was ending, and they went away to a different page. That was a problem for us because at the end of every video, we had, you know, the hotline number or the website where they could get more information. So that meant that all those people were not seeing that crucial information that we put at the end of the video. So by using that data, we decided to put it up front, to work it into the video throughout, and to change our formatting so that we could conform to what how the users were using our products and not the way that we thought the best format should be. I really liked, there's this really old commercial where there's this guy sitting at the computer and he's surfing the web and all of a sudden a screen pops up and it says, you have reached the end of the internet. None of your users should ever reach the end of your internet. There's no activity or no piece of content where they should read it and you should say, thank you for coming, have a nice day. Everything should be cross-linked. Every activity should be, you know, either more information or related information, or if you like that, you might like this. That's a good way to really help people not only engage in your content, but remember your site, think about coming back the next time they want information, and to remember the information that they learn there, because they're spending more time with your content. Number 8, and I think that I have achieved some skills in this, is to choose your internal battles wisely. So hypothetically, I know someone who may have spent about 18 months fighting an internal battle to get access to post some social media, not only to view the social media on their desktops, but to be able to post. And in this hypothetical scenario, perhaps the attorneys had some considerations, and perhaps the people who did archives and records management had some considerations, and there were a lot of people that this made very, very anxious. There are some activities where I can say, all right, in order to get things done efficiently, let's find a different way to execute the activity or a different way to use the channel so we can accomplish something. But there are some battles that you have to fight, even though they might be lengthy and time-consuming, because these are the steps that will make your organization overall more innovative. You want your legal team, if that's an issue, to understand why these tools are important. You want your technical team to give you access from your desktop. It's not okay just to go home and do things on your home computer because you can't access it at work. That's not going to move the organization forward, and that's not recognizing that these are powerful channels that are part of your everyday work. So there are some battles that I think are worth fighting internally so that you pave the way for more innovation. And as government workers, we just push the boulder up the hill a little bit each day. The 9th of 10 tips, don't be afraid to be different. There are lots of guidelines out there. There are lots of tools. The AIDS.gov information on new media is fantastic. CDC has a great toolkit that they've put out. And I don't know if Jessica Schindler is still here. From CDC, but she worked on that, and it's great tips for getting started. But this is a new and evolving range of channels, and so the rules will change. But the rules were also written by people who, when we started doing this 6 years ago, there weren't any rules, and we made them up. And so there can always be improved upon. So don't be afraid to break the rules if it's what's best for your audience. Going back to what a number of people have said here today, who is it that you're communicating with, what are you trying to achieve, and what's the best way to do that? And if that means using one of the channels in a totally different way, then sometimes that's great. And the last tip is to have fun. Right? No one wants to hang out with a boring bureaucrat. If you're not having fun using social media, then why would anybody else want to participate? You're asking, this is your job and what you care about and what you want to communicate, but this is other people's free time. And you're competing against things that are really fun. And so if you want them to engage, if you want them to spend time with you, have fun with it. That doesn't mean that it has to be flippant. That doesn't mean that every post has to have a joke or everything you do has to have some humor. But it should be fun to do. I know for us, we did have an RSS feed that sort of, every time we post a blog post on our site, it would take the title and it would put it up on our Twitter feed. And we thought, that's great. Automated, no effort involved. It gets the tweets up right away. And then, I looked at it one day and I thought, how boring is this? I don't want to get this in my inbox. So now we do all of that manually so we can say something interesting about it. So we can include, someone else on Twitter who might have contributed, be a guest author. So really, make sure that it's fun and so that, people want to hang out with you. And I'll leave you with that on Halloween night. Thank you.
So right now, I'd love to be able to open up the panel here to some questions. We have about maybe 20 minutes or so. So go ahead for the first one, just the third person. and project because there's lots of
people. I'm Nick Mel, and I run a public health program for little kids, 12 and under. We tried Facebook, I got 13 likes, and then my social media guru person found a site called Skinny Kids. Are any of you familiar with it, and what are the implications of using that to promote health for little kids?
I'm not familiar with it either.
I'm not familiar with Skinny Kids, but our office runs a national media campaign, the Above the Influence campaign, and they have done some work with using technology for folks under 13, and so I'd be happy to answer any questions about that, because I can't use that with data allowed.
Yeah, this site, it's Kid, S-K-I-D-E, Kid. Is apparently the sister site of Facebook.
Kidney Drop.
Not to put the person sitting next to you on the spot, but is a colleague I'm working indirectly with the CDC and can bet you if you two chat, you've got a smart person there with some vehicles the CDC uses to reach young adults.
So go ahead in the purple.
So our organization's strategy is basically, I'm wondering whether it's better to have a presence there or then have it be poorly managed or not have it at all.
Well, that was a wow. First, you have to, I don't know what organization, but you really, it's going back to your colleagues and who you're trying to serve. And you have to build an army with those folks and ask them what they want. What kind of agency, what type of agency do you work for?
It's a nonprofit.
Serving?
I'll tell you.
No, you don't have to.
No, it's the Suicide Prevention Research Center. And
you've got an amazing network of folks. The feedback you get back from, I don't know how you, from the services you provide, the counselors. Go to them. Ask them, you know, how people are asking for information, looking for information. Start by asking those questions, because poorly managed anything, I think as Aaron said, you know, just don't do it. I mean, because you're not going to help someone. But again, go to the team of your colleagues. Start asking the questions. Do a little research about what's your competition. Why were they successful? And you, if they were successful, we don't always have to use these tools, you know, but when it is appropriate, and I'm sure there's hopefully been some focus group with family and users of your services, well, that's a place to start with regardless of these tools.
Yeah, go ahead.
I noticed you had cash rewards on there, and I'm wondering how do you structure those kind of tweets?
Oh, on the Twitter survey? That was just a one-time incentive that we did for the Twitter survey respondents, and they provided their email address if they wanted to win the prize, and we awarded them, I think it was an Amazon gift card.
Twitter's contest rules are pretty flexible. It's Facebook that has crazy rules about contests and promotions, so they don't have a problem with you doing
like
that.
Yeah,
I just said Twitter is pretty flexible with their contest rules. So you can do the type of contest that they did with a $25 gift card pretty easily on Twitter, whereas if you want to do a similar contest on Facebook, it's a little more complicated. They have a lot of rules for you to adhere to.
Go ahead.
What's your advice about, as a grad student, promoting my research without coming across like a writer? Because I want to, you know, get the word out about what I do, but I don't want people to think, oh, she's just
I mean, I think if you make it about the substance, people are really
whole lot of consultants and media folks, and I found it usually pretty easy to see where the depth of substance is, and I think that's where you're going to get engagement. That's where you're going to get, you know, people who are interested following your work and also, you know, wanting to share ideas and brainstorm. And so I think the more, and this I think is about all of the programs in general, the more that it's about the substance of the work, the deeper the engagement is going to be.
And you've got other students, other colleagues. Brainstorm with them what they would appreciate hearing. The fact that there's also a hunger for good information, and again, it's also still very helpful for someone like me and others in your position or thinking about the issue may very love to hear from you. So, and it's also good just to experiment and stick your toe in the water.
And I saw you back there.
There's very few sharks.
I think we have time for about two more questions, so I know that you're chomping at the bit, so go ahead.
I'm doing less than 140 characters. My question to the panel is, how diverse is the group of social media leads in the federal government agencies?
Actually, I'm sorry.
How diverse are the media leads? Yeah, I'm looking at a wide panel, so I just want to wonder, just sort of personal, I mean, just wondering how diverse is it?
Well, for one, it was actually put together workshops to bring together community of color leadership, other leadership, and not just diverse across all sort of occupations within the public health community. I find that sort of advocates for using more social or emerging technologies, that there is a limited number of people of color in particular who are being advocates. There's some great number of folks who are doing really good work, but some of the organizations, largest organizations serving communities of color, their agencies, and this is a generalization, repeat generalization, is within their offices are usually one or two lone wolves, and the offices haven't integrated fully the use of these tools, which is true across many public health communities. And so one of the things around just diversity is also real important for us all to understand the wonderful thing that all these tools have done is eliminating the digital divide, and that we really have to understand how whatever community you're serving is using these tools. Because it's really important to know that, like for example, We were asked about children earlier, and Native American communities, how important it is about just access to the internet for home, for school. In my Latino community, more aggressive use of cell phone to find health information versus a desktop. What does that mean? But what does that mean, again, all that question relates back to who you're trying to serve and reach. I just wanted to, someone asked very early, and I didn't tell them where the slides were. It's called slideshare.net, and then it's /AIDSgov, but I just wanted to answer that. But a great place to borrow, as long as you cite other people's slides.
How about in the way back there?
Yep.
I haven't heard a mention about email. I know that doesn't fit in the category of social media. I know I spend a lot of my time talking to people through email, and I just wonder what you think the sort of future of email is.
I do a lot of work in email, and it's definitely still there. It's still a big deal. It's still compared to social media. Social media is just a drop in the bucket compared to the number of people you can email, the amount of money raised through email. The younger generation is using email less and less, so it's where it's going, I'm not sure. But right now, it's still important.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no doubt that there are massive amounts of people that use email every day, but I think those people also get massive amounts of email. It's always difficult to participate in a channel where you really need to stand out among so much competition. So I think email is no different than posters and flyers and other things. These aren't things that you can segment out and say we're going to use only the new and not the old, but really what's the mix of those. And when you start with who you're trying to reach and when you start with where they get their information, that should define the types of channels that you use to reach them. And that's where you get the mix of traditional media and then your digital media.
And I would say APHA, mm-hmm. we do have a lot of success still with emails. Speaking with my other hat on, the Nation's Health, we sent out an email called Highlights from the Nation's Health to non-members every month, and that completely drives visits to our website, like through the roof. So I wouldn't count email out yet.
And email is also about, as Aaron was alluding to too, it's about management. Looking at what's in the subject line, it's sort of like when I was saying earlier, remember to look at your web page. Please look at how you're writing your emails. On our team, my favorite little acronym is in an email subject line is NIM, nothing in message. And it's just to tell, a quick expression of quick data moving back and forth. But again, especially if you're sending out blast emails, and there's also some helpful tips that you can find how to effectively use email, but nothing's more effective than asking your target audience.
And I guess I might pepper in the conversation too, if you don't mind. But, even from a traditional media outreach perspective, I think email, for me, email is one of my sole channels of reaching reporters. So, we're still in the communication sphere, and that's what I lean on, and I think that's what reporters lean on too. So as it relates to kind of getting your message out there, I still think email's a great source too. So thank you for coming and your fruitful questions. And I don't know if these folks have any time afterwards, but I appreciate y'all being here. Thank you. Happy Halloween.